Good evening, everyone. It is 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, September 18th, 2025, and I would like to call the Ponsonlet Town Council to order. Let the record reflect that all council members are present and in chambers. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
Item 4 on the agenda, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Mike, do you have a modification?
Yes, one please. I'd like to move item 11C to 8C. That is an update on the investment policy, and we have one of our consultants who's here to present that.
Thank you. I'm moving it to 8C, Bill.
8C?
Yeah. 11C to 8C, and I have an addition of a proclamation, a new 6B proclamation recognizing Hispanic Heritage Month. The old 6B of Mayor's Proclamation Report becomes 6C. Does anyone else have an addition, correction, or deletion? Okay, seeing none, I move to adopt the agenda as modified on the record.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as modified. We are now at citizen participation. This is your opportunity to come to the podium and speak on an item that is not listed on our agenda. Please make sure you have filled out a pink slip and provided to our town clerk, Kim Trebano, who is seated in the front. When you come to the podium, I would ask that you place your name and address on the record. And as you all know, I believe at this point that this is just one way to communicate with your council and the staff. Should you choose, and we do encourage that you also consider communicating with your council members or staff by telephone, email, or request a meeting. As you know, there's no limitation to 5 minutes in those meetings or phone calls, as our rules call for in citizen participation here. So I'm going to begin in the order that I received these, and the first is Liz Finch, please. Liz?
Liz Finch, 106 Rains Drive. Good evening, Mayor, council members, staff, and fellow residents. I asked to speak tonight to express my appreciation to all of you who work continually to make Ponce Inlet such a great town. My husband and I chose Ponce because of its small town feeling that offers many special advantages. We're blessed to have our own police department, fire department, a very active community center, beautiful parks and recreations, and some of the best friends and neighbors. I'm also grateful for the citizens that get involved, whether on a board or volunteering around town, and those who also attend these town meetings and express their feelings and thoughts about how the town is doing and what they would like to see be done. We're lucky to have a council willing to listen and a staff that's always available and opened to answer any questions and take any suggestions. We have boards made up of volunteer citizens, such as a cultural board, planning board, and essential services. I have the privilege of working on the cultural board. Our focus is on the parks, recreation, trees, and historic preservation. Our meetings, like all the boards, are open to the public. This is how we learn what the desires of the residents are. As a board, in the beginning of the year, we're asked what we would like to see added to the budget for the following year. Of course, every citizen wants to have something different. And just like the staff and council, we aim to please. Unfortunately, not everyone can be pleased. No one likes to pay more taxes. But everyone likes to get what they desire. So, staff and council, you are greatly appreciated. I know your job can be rough at times, but please know that the residents do care for you and are very grateful to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz. Thank you. Mark Obeck.
Mark Obeck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive, speaking today on behalf of the Ponsonnet Veterans Memorial Association. Thought I'd give an update on where we stand on the expansion and some ideas regarding Davies Park. Where are we? We anticipate the grand installation by October 10th. The grading of the area around the walls, October 13th, that's assuming that the granite's on time, repairs the existing memorial granite. As you probably noticed, there are cracks in the facing of the existing memorial. We're getting that fixed along with one of the benches. Installation of new pavers, week of the 20th. We had a delay in the paver delivery, so we're hoping that by October 20th, it'll give the time for the delivery and the installation. Ground level floodlights. We determined that the best way to light the walls is from bottom up instead of top down. So in front of each side of the wall will be at least two lights to light up the face of the wall. Replacement of faded original pavers. As you'll note, remember, we have replaced a number of them. We have about 20 more to go. And we hope that we'll be able to dedicate the walls on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of this year. And landscaping, we'll defer that until everything around regarding the walls are done. Fundraising efforts. We obviously are welcoming all donations. Everything will be acknowledged, whether or not it's $5, $500, $5,000, or more. We're lucky we already have two $10,000 donations that were provided to us. On our website, you can order plaques, pavers, or make those direct donations. And then we'll be sending out a solicitation flyer asking for donations. And that basically is the flyer there, except it's going to be on a really sharp document. Blow your socks off. The current memorial entrance, you really can walk right by it. It's nondescript, needs a magnet. Also, the current flagpole alignment. You can't see what flags are up there. There's so many. And it tends to hide the lighthouse. So we're going to change the flag alignment. There are only going to be three flags: Old Glory, State of Florida, and the POW flag. So what do we do with the service flags, each of the six service flags? Well, guess what? We're going to put them along the walkway, three on each side. So it adds, becomes a nice corridor that will highlight the pathway itself. It'll draw more attention to each service flag. Plaque at the bottom of each flag indicating when that service was formed. The existing memorial, the seals, you'll see in the bottom left, the Merchant Marine. We need to get one for the Space Force. So what are we doing? We're going to eliminate the Merchant Marine. That service is no longer an established service in the armed forces, and that's where the Space Force seal will be placed. Okay, apologies in advance to anyone that might be offended with the following. Here's the entrance to the park. What do you see when you come in? I see a trash can, a poop bag dispenser, and another trash can behind it. It's not really an inviting entrance. Recognition is lost on why that park is there. So maybe an alternative. This is difficult. Oh, slide flipped a little bit. But the coquina that's there for Ms. Davies, move it up to the entrance to the park. And as you can't see, but it makes the view going into the park more open, because the way the coquina and the trees are around it now, or the brushes, it blocks everything. So let's move it. Let's move it. Interesting. Slides got mixed up. The second idea is the chain link fence by the lighthouse. It's not attractive. Maybe let's see if there are an alternative so that we don't see the back of lighthouse buildings. So asking for some guidance, form a group that can look at the vision for the park, best way to engage the lighthouse in determining fence alterations, and identify partnerships that we can pursue to make that park really something that when people visit it, they walk away with a real positive memory. Thank you.
Mark, thank you very much. We're very appreciative of all of your efforts with the veterans. Thank you so much.
And I would encourage everyone on the town council to visit our website. I know we have a council member that has already provided a donation. We welcome all of them. By the way, just a quick note, the walls and everything we're doing will probably run about $100,000. So we're looking for every dollar we can get. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Mr. Field.
Second.
Excuse me?
I thought there was others before me. I have a handout.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mayor. This is budget.
Agenda item?
This is budget.
Yeah. Mr. Field, this is an agenda item when we talk about our budget.
I couldn't tell that, so I'm sorry.
That's
can wait.
Please don't apologize. No, we're delighted to have this, so if you wouldn't mind and wait until 10 A and B. But thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to speak at this time? And seeing none, we'll close citizen participation. Item 6, proclamations, presentations, and awards. Our first, 6A, this is declaring October 23 to the 31st as Red Ribbon Week, supporting the Volusia Young Marines. I will read the proclamation, and in our audience, we have our young Marines along with their unit commander, Sarah Zettelmeyer. Now, once I read the proclamation, I will ask Unit Commander Zettelmeyer and the young Marines to please join me. And if they wish to say a few words, we would welcome that. And then our council will join for a photograph as we present the proclamation. So to begin, please permit me the proclamation of the town of Ponce Inlet, Florida. Whereas communities across America have been plagued by the numerous problems associated with illicit drug use and those that traffic in them, and whereas there is hope in winning the war on drugs, and that hope lies in education and drug demand reduction, coupled with the hard work and determination of organizations such as the Young Marines of the Marine Corps League to foster a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. And whereas governments and community leaders know that citizen support is one of the most effective tools in the effort to reduce the use of illicit drugs in our communities. And whereas the red ribbon has been chosen as a symbol commemorating the work of Henri Kiki Camarena, a Drug Enforcement Administration agent who was murdered in the line of duty, and represents the belief that one person can make a difference. And whereas the Red Ribbon Campaign was established by Congress in 1988 to encourage a drug-free lifestyle and involvement in drug prevention and reduction efforts, And whereas October 23rd through the 31st has been designated National Red Ribbon Week, which encourages Americans to wear a red ribbon to show their support for a drug-free environment. And now, therefore, I, Lois Peritsky, mayor of the town of Ponce Inlet, do hereby proclaim October 23rd through the 31st, 2025 as Red Ribbon Week in the town of Ponce Inlet and urge all citizens to join me in this special observance. In witness whereof, I hereunto set my hand and cause the seal of the town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, to be affixed this 18th day of September, 2025. So, Unit Commander and all of your young Marines, here we go. Let's see.
Organization. We're for children 8 to 18. We focus on drug demand reduction. We teach them leadership, teamwork, and discipline. This is one of my recruits. We have 12 in the program right now, 4 recruits. But we had other things going on tonight. We had open houses and volleyball and all the fun kid stuff. But we actually meet at LPGA, off LPGA Boulevard in Daytona Beach. And we meet on the 2nd to 4th Saturday of every month. We're always
Salvation
looking.
Army.
Salvation Army. What did I say?
You just said LPGA.
Oh, Salvation Army. So if there's anybody ever wants to volunteer, come out and check us out or donate, we're always welcome.
Thank you so much, and thank you for coming here rather than some of the other fun things. Here, let me.
Yeah.
Okay. And now it's my honor to present a proclamation recognizing the Hispanic Heritage Month. We have with us here today the executive board member of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of Central Florida, Lorena Ruiz Vasquez. Now, this chamber's home is in Deltona, where their events and programs create meaningful opportunities to connect, learn, and grow. And I'm truly appreciative of the educational resources this chamber has extended to me, to all the elected officials in our area, and also our businesses. So I will read the proclamation, and then I will ask Lorena to please come up where I can present the proclamation and have a few photos. So the proclamation of the town of Ponce Inlet, Florida. Whereas September 15th to October 15th, 2025 is recognized nationally as Hispanic Heritage Month to celebrate the significant contributions Hispanic and Latino Americans have made in the United States. And whereas we give extra recognition to the many contributions made to the history and culture of the United States, including important advocacy work, vibrant art, popular and traditional foods, and much more. And whereas the 2025 Hispanic Heritage Month theme is Collective Heritage, Honoring the Past, Inspiring the Future. And whereas September 15th is significant because it marks the anniversary of independence for the Latin American countries of Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. In addition, Mexico, Chile, and Belize celebrate their independence days on September 16th, 18th, and the 21st, respectively. And whereas this month-long celebration provides an opportunity for us to come together and showcase the vibrant traditions, history, and accomplishments of Hispanic businesses, individuals, and families. And whereas the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of Central Florida is dedicated to promoting the growth and development of Hispanic businesses in our region, and by working together, we can foster economic development, cultural understanding, and community engagement. And whereas this month is a time to recognize the rich cultural heritage and significant contributions of Hispanic Americans to our community and the innumerable contributions to the advancement of business, education, medicine, the arts, and public service. Now, therefore, I, Lois A. Peritsky, Mayor of the Town of Ponce Inlet, do hereby proclaim September 15th to October 15th, 2025, as Hispanic Heritage Month to celebrate the history, culture, and contributions that Hispanic and Latino communities have made to American society. In witness whereof, I hereunto set my hand and cause the seal of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, to be affixed this 18th day of September, 2025. And Lorena, can I ask you to please come up?
I want to thank you for all your work of the chamber and everything that you offer to all the communities. Is there anything you'd like to say, or will this have a phone call?
I'd like to thank you on behalf of our staff and our executive. And if they have an Hispanic member in your community, our businesses, and our workforce, they really are the pillar of our community and the courtesy of the American community.
Thank you so much for coming. And
I'm going to go with all council.
We doing that again?
The following proclamations will be presented after this meeting and may be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. In recognition of the role played by municipal government in our daily lives, I will present a proclamation declaring the week of October 20th to the 26th, 2025, as Florida City Week. In conjunction with the celebration of National Community Planning Month, I am presenting a proclamation declaring October 2025 as Community Planning Month. Calling upon the residents of the Town of Ponce Inlet to join in activities that will increase awareness of what Americans can do to prevent breast cancer, I am presenting a proclamation declaring the month of October 2025 as National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And to encourage residents to learn more about the native plants in our community, I am presenting a proclamation declaring October 2025 as Florida Native Plant Month. A copy of the proclamations may be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. Now, moving on, item 7. This is our consent agenda. There are two items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull one of the items?
Yes, Mayor. I'd like to pull 7A, and that's request disposal of fixed capital assets, just for a couple of clarifications.
Okay, so 7A is being pulled, and it will become 13, let me see.
13C.
13C.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else wish to pull one of the items from the audience? Okay, seeing none then, I move to approve the consent agenda as modified on the record.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, now we are up to 8A, the appointment to Cultural Services, Historic Preservation, and the Tree Advisory Board. Ms. Tribano? Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The Cultural Services, Historic Preservation, and Tree Advisory Board consists of 7 seats. The only seats currently available are for alternates 1 and 2, and Ms. Susan Vanderbeek has applied for appointment to the board, and she informed staff that she has reviewed the training materials as required by the application. The applicant is in attendance today, should you have any questions.
Well, thank you. Ms. Vanderbeek, I understand you are here. Would you like to come up and say a few words to us? And please state your name and address for the record.
Hello, Mayor, Councilmen, members. My name is Susan Vanderbeek, and I live at 58 Jennifer Circle. I came here about in 1969 on spring break and fell in love with Ponce Inlet. And 10 years later, I bought my forever home. And now that I'm retired, I'm looking forward to serving the community. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Does anyone have any questions other than to say thank you and we welcome you to the service?
Yeah, I do. Thank okay. you. And I notice you have your EDS in special ed. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Mine's in a counseling and administration.
Oh, okay. Great.
But yeah, I'm welcome aboard strictly for that.
Thank you so much.
Anyone else? Yes.
Yeah, Sue, I just
asked me a question. I knew it was.
I've been picking on Sue. I told her that once she got to the podium that she was mine. I was going to ask her all kinds of questions, and she said, please don't. I just want to say thank you. And I've known Sue and Soraya for quite some time, and I'm happy that you both are getting involved in the town. We need you. We need more residents like you and your daughter to step up and really support the town. So thank you for that.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to ask any questions? Okay, well, seeing none, we look forward to your service, and I will need a motion. Thank you. I will need a motion.
Yeah, if it's okay, I'd like to make the motion. I'd like to make a motion to appoint Sue Vanderbeek to the alternate seat of Cultural Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, unanimous. Thank you, and we look forward to having you on our board. Thank you so much. We are up to 8B, which is recommendations for mitigating construction-related stormwater impacts presented by Collective Water Resources. Okay.
Principal Planner, Patty Rippey, is going to introduce the
presenter. Yes. Thank you. There you are, Patty. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight we're joined by Elizabeth Perez, President, and Joel Jordan, Quality Control Director from Collective Water Resources. As you know, they completed our Watershed Master Plan last year, and this evening they will present their recommended regulatory standards, codes, and techniques for mitigating stormwater impacts associated with construction activities.
Thank you, Patty.
Madam Mayor, members of the Town Council, staff, and citizens of Ponce Inlet, it is a pleasure to be here. I attend a lot of meetings similar to this, and I have to say it's always wonderful to come to Ponce Inlet. You have such nice meetings. So I will dive in. Tonight we're going to be talking about some specific recommendations related to mitigating construction-related impacts as they pertain to stormwater. So let's see, let's give this a whirl here. We're going to quickly summarize existing regulations, and I promise it will be fast, and then we're going to talk about our specific recommendations for Ponce Inlet. So to just give you a little bit of background, we're here talking about this because of the concerns that you have brought forward specific to the town. This is a very relevant issue, both here within the town and throughout the state, and it does build on the work of our Watershed Master Plan, which was just completed. So we're going to look at recommendations that fall outside the current body of regulations, which really is pretty significant. But sadly, and probably as most of you know, during the last legislative session here in Florida, SB 180 was passed, which has tied the hands of the town and virtually every local government throughout the state of Florida in your ability to pass any potential regulations or changes to your code. So we're going to talk about potential changes that you could make, but we want to acknowledge that before we begin. So, how does construction influence stormwater? How do they interact? You see this every day when you drive around. We're having our wet season right now. We know that sediment is transported via stormwater, as well as a number of other pollutants, debris, and really that ultimately impacts our water bodies, and that's of significant concern, as well as our quality of life and our personal property. So what are some of the impacts that occur here in particular within the town? What are we particularly concerned about? You have very sandy soils here within the town, as you know. That means that they're transported more easily via stormwater and or wind. So that is a particular concern. You also have, when you have construction projects, water is moving around, your floodplain storage may move around, and then of course, that may impact storage areas that are designated to store stormwater. So all of these are of concern, all of these have been observed. In terms of regulations, of course, you have federal, state, and local, and that starts with the federal regulations at the top. Those go all the way back to 1972, in particular with the Clean Water Act. There's two particular programs that pertain to this issue. You have the construction permit via NPDES, National Pollution Discharge Elimination Systems, and then there is also the town's permit for stormwater, that's referred to as your MS4 permit. So the town does a lot of significant work in terms of managing stormwater and construction activities. There are also a lot of other regulations that sit below that. There are those related to the St. Johns River Water Management District. And then here in Volusia County, Volusia County really is a leader statewide in stormwater and water resources. So you have a significant body of regulations at the county level. And then, of course, your code that already is very relevant to this issue as well. Now, via activities that FDOT participates in, as well as Florida case law related to drainage, there's a lot of other considerations for this issue. You have requirements for both upland owners and lowland owners, as they are referred to in the law. And really, this creates an entire other body of regulations that are relevant to this issue. And in your packet, you were all given a very lengthy memo on this issue. I want to acknowledge the firm of Delapart and Gilbert that also assisted us in the preparation of that memo that you have. So we also have the Florida TIN 2 permit, and this is a self-certification for smaller projects. It's worth mentioning. It was a little bit during the creation of the Florida Stormwater Rule over the past couple of years, there was a lot of talk about that, but it does still pertain to this issue. So that's really just a self-certification. And then finally, there are two Volusia County land development regulations that pertain to this issue, particularly in the realm of wetlands and beach and dune protection. So we also acknowledge those. And then, of course, your own land development standards. And really, those are pretty extensive. It's woven throughout your code. So In terms of our recommendations, they essentially come in five parts. So we're going to quickly go through those. This project was geared towards providing you with recommendations, not specific legal language. So we're going to talk about them in sort of practical terms. So in terms of Chapter 18, we are recommending that you consider requiring stormwater pollution prevention plans below the size threshold that you currently require. Those are very specific plans that prevent erosion. It requires very specific information from engineers to prevent the movement of soil and to mitigate any impacts in terms of stormwater leaving the site. In addition, specific best management practices might be helpful. A lot of the codes mention silt fence, and practically speaking, silt fence doesn't always cut it. Sometimes you need to provide a little bit more information. In addition, you might want to consider some inspection requirements for the sites. A lot of that is being delegated to the local level these days, as well as detail sheets. And we provided in your memo some detail sheets. These are very high quality from the City of Orlando. A lot of those already exist, so you would just want to pull those and make those more localized for you all. In terms of the Land Use Development Code, Article 4, you also could consider specific best management practices for the sequence of construction. So different best management practices as you go through the construction process, because obviously as construction proceeds, a site can change a lot. So it helps to alter your management of the site. And then, of course, maintaining those controls is so important. So you will want to consider some specific language in that direction. In terms of Chapter 66, you might want to consider some BMP performance criteria, as well as, again, specifically mentioning the creation of stormwater pollution prevention plans. But you want to create that prior to the disturbance of any land. And, of course, again, inspection and enforcement controls. And then for Chapter 70, let's see. Oh, go back. Okay. For Chapter 70, for sidewalks and other public places, we again recommend that you consider stormwater pollution prevention plans and then, of course, restoration and cleanup standards as those projects are completed. Those are just two very practical changes that might help you out a lot. In terms of Article 4, you may also want to consider requiring topographic information for off-site areas. Of course, water does not observe property boundaries, so looking off-site at the topographic layout would be very helpful. As well as, again, requiring those stormwater pollution prevention plans, and then, of course, tighter construction practices and controls. So it's really a lot of tightening up regarding the stormwater pollution prevention plans and really just being more specific about those construction controls. There are a couple of other additional recommendations we've included related to training. There's a lot of fantastic training within the state of Florida, and the town could consider incentivizing this for those that are performing construction within the town. For example, Volusia County is doing this. So you could require that contractors complete this training prior, or not require, but you could incentivize it, that they complete this training prior to construction within the town. With that said, we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Before I open, I do have one question. In your experience, when you present these recommendations to a municipality, does it rest with the municipal employees to implement this, or are there outside consultants that do this?
I would say that the next step would be having your potentially your town attorney work on specific language based on this memorandum. And of course, we have Nick Porter, who's an attorney that helped us with this, with the help of staff. And then you would consider it again. Of course, because we're in this SB 180 era, you would put it on hold. But that would be the next step. So I don't think there's a lot of, in terms of engineering consultants, I don't think there's a lot more involvement. At this point, I think it goes to the town's attorney and staff for those considerations.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Thank you so much. Okay. So, go ahead.
Just for a little clarification, I've been in this area my entire career, and we use the two terms construction for the smaller and the buildings, and we use development for the bigger things, which was development of subdivisions or development of large areas.
Sure.
Do these rules apply differently to either one of those, or are they the same across the board?
That's a good question. I'll answer, and then maybe Joel might want to add on to that. As an engineer, I refer to construction as construction, anything past the design process, but I understand what you're saying. There are different, as I mentioned, for example, there's the TIN 2 permit that pertains to smaller projects, but really it would be up to the town. I think given your size and the way you're developed, you're looking at making some changes for projects at a pretty fine scale. So I would say that our recommendations reflect that, not the sort of larger development.
I'm referring to one of these days, we have two reasonably large parcels, one on the river and one on the inlet, that are sitting there empty. And they could be what I would call a development, because they're going to have a bigger order of magnitude than building a house on a vacant lot.
Yes, gotcha. Yes, I mean, and at some point, too, these TRIP, for example, the St. John's River water management requirements, and we're speaking to tonight the construction-related issues. So these are temporary requirements as construction is taking place. And then there's a very significant body of law that also governs the permanent development and the permanent infrastructure that's created for stormwater.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question probably for Michael. But some of these regulatory standards we currently operate with, correct, in our codes?
We have some versions of these standards.
So, and I'm going somewhere with this, of course. But so this would be upgrading what we currently have. So the question would be, do we have the manpower to manage these upgrades if they go into effect? Because that seems to be pretty stringent.
Well, yeah, of course, we'd have to look at that. I mean, right now they're talking about just improvements, and of course, we'd have to see what we can do, you know, under our current staffing levels.
Okay. And again, I mean, I think that's a big concern for the overall program, because, and I agree with Gary, we have, you know, two parcels out there that could be a development. And then if you start looking around the town, we do not have that many vacant lots left that is buildable until people start buying older homes and tearing them down. So that would be the only thought I would have on that. And then, again, you did touch on SB 180. So, Cliff, that'd be a question for you, and I think I know the answer. But if we agree to do this, this is not putting us out there as being I'm going to say against, because we are against 180, but it's not obligating us to be involved in any type of lawsuit or anything further.
No, it doesn't obligate us to be involved in any type of lawsuit. I'll simply say that, which if you've been following this story of SB 180, will be no surprise to you, and if you haven't, it might be. There appears to be no links to which the current folks in Tallahassee will go to allow development to the consternation of local government. And if that seems like I'm speaking too broadly, you need to pay attention. So could you get sued and someone claim that this is somehow a violation of SB 80? Yes. Do I think it would succeed? I would ordinarily say no. I think that's the right answer. But because of the unpredictability now, not only of Tallahassee and their interpretation, having, you know, overruled comp plan amendments and other things for Orange County, for the city of Apopka, which is far from a liberal bastion, if you know anything about Apopka, and other places, and the appointment of substantially more conservative judges, it's hard to say. Okay. I would tell you I think you're okay,
okay,
but I don't know.
Thank you, Mayor. Yep.
I'll say from our standpoint, these are recommendations only. They do not take the form of law, and therefore we can't implement them.
Joe?
In essence, though, the rules and regulations we have in place today really just have to be tweaked. And what I'm hearing, if I'm hearing this correctly, is it would be more beneficial for us to hire an outside contractor to do that as opposed to an employee, someone who was certified to do the tweaks to meet all the standards of the government, correct?
You could. I mean, here we have the practical outline of what you could consider, and then, to my mind, the next step would be the legal language and sort of the legality of it, which you could consider getting some outside help with that, certainly.
Bill?
Joe, just my feeling, I don't think we need the outside help. I think we have a staff that's capable of doing it first. But the second thing is everything that we do, if I understand 180 correctly, has got to be strictly on a voluntary basis, a recommendation, just like the 2.5 Mike added it to the four-page memo that he put out. Our hands are stifled because of 180 on doing anything that is good for Ponce Inlet concerning stormwater and preservation, et cetera. We managed to do that, hopefully with enough people doing the complaining that's going on, and the suits that will develop are hopefully the people in Tallahassee will wake up and do a special session. I very seriously doubt it, but they will bring it up in the next legislative session, I am hoping, because this is a great piece. I read it probably two times at the introduction. It's a great piece. And my quote was, always remember Forrest Gump, stupid is as stupid does. So our job is to try and have enough people say that you made a mistake, correct it. And this is a great job to correct with.
And it is an excellent job. And what we're being asked to do is accept the memorandum and its recommendations. That's what we're being asked to do. So before, I think the council has asked all the questions that they have, I'll open it up to the public. Is there anyone in the public who has any questions? I see a hand, but not a person. Mr. Field, yes.
Steve Field, 6 Marzel. Until they define SB 180, shouldn't we delay any additional funds being spent on this until we understand exactly what we can or cannot do?
I think that for what we're being asked for this evening, we could certainly do that as accepted in terms of how we move forward. Mr. Field, you're right. We don't want to throw good money out. However, I can't say what would be right or not right at this moment, but conceptually, of course.
Yeah,
we don't want to waste money, but we want to accept this and see what we can do.
Yeah, but to update the city's charter or whatever, that's going to cost money, right? Huh? Okay, so we just accept the study and say thank you very much.
Well, I can't specify what we can and cannot do within the confines of SB 180 and all this right at this moment. You understand we have our attorney who's going to guide us with that, because we don't want to run afoul of SB 180, clearly.
No, I'm sure we don't. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Field. Anybody else? Okay.
Well, I would say, Mayor, just in practical terms, no. I mean, this, to do anything with this, it has to be turned into law. And so you're going to be spending money either in the form of staff time or with attorneys and different consultants to do it. So that decision hadn't been made yet.
That's right. It's just premature, but for purposes of this evening, I think that I think we can accept this technical memorandum, and I would appreciate a motion.
I'll do it. I make a motion to accept the technical memorandum and its recommendations as presented by the Collective Water Resources, LLC.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we have unanimous agreement on this. I want to thank you for the presentation. I think it was excellent. Patty, thank you as well. Okay, moving on, we have our new 8C, Resolution 2025-16, Amendments to the Town of Ponce Inlet's Investment Policy. Cliff, could you read the resolution by title only, please?
Resolution 2025-16, read by title only, a resolution of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Volusia County, Florida, amending the town's investment policy for municipal funds and providing for conflict severability and an effective date.
Thank you so much. And before we begin, I'm remiss. We have Debbie Phillips here in our audience. This is our representative from Congressman Corey Mills' office. We're very appreciative to have you here. Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Thank you. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, I just got a card from Congressman Mills wishing me a happy birthday. Huh? End of the month.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Birthday, Bill.
Okay, so, Kim, is this, okay, if you'll present or please, you're going to introduce.
Mr. Larson serves as president of Larson Consulting Services, a registered financial advisory firm based in Orlando. Since 1992, he has provided investment banking, financial consulting, and financial advisory services to municipalities throughout Florida. His expertise has facilitated the successful completion of municipal project and corporate financings totaling over $10 billion. Mr. Larson earned his MBA from Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. He frequently speaks at key industry conferences, including the Florida Government Finance Officers Association, School of Governmental Finance, Florida Bar Association, and Florida League of Cities, just to name a few. He maintains professional license with the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board. Mr. Larson's financial expertise has been vital in revising our investment policy. His recommended changes ensure statutory compliance while positioning the town to maximize investment earnings. Mr. Larson is present to give a brief presentation explaining the town's updated investment policy and will answer any questions anyone has at the end of his presentation.
Thank you, Kim. And for the record, Jeff Larson, president of Larson Consulting Services in Orlando, Florida. Pleasure to be here tonight. Kind of in a financial advisory capacity. Kim had the pleasure or the displeasure of hearing me speak at a conference and came down after that and said she heard a couple things from me. One was it's important to update your investment policies about every 2 to 3 years, and it's been 11 years since you've done that, so it's time to address this. The legislature, I'm not an SB 180, whatever, experts. I'm not going to comment on that, but they do like to get involved in a bunch of different things. One of those things was tied to ESG standards, environmental, social, and government standards that some of the big institutions were adopting and doing investments. The state decided they didn't like that, and so they have asked one of the change in your policy conforms to that new Florida law that you're making investment decisions based on financial reasons and not because of somebody's hiring practices or because of their policies and things like that. So that's not really why we're here today, but since you're considering an update, that's included. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly, if I can. Your investment policy in reviewing it was, on a scale of 1 to 10, about an 8. It was very well done. It was taken from, I think, a larger community, which is not uncommon. So when I've done investment policies for UCF and for Broward County, Orlando, and for smaller cities, City of Arcadia, and communities like that. And so the one of the big things we want to do is look at the policy, look at the staff, look to see how big of a town and city and a county you are, and make sure it's relevant to you. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'll give a rationale for some of the updates and some of the key benefits. For policies, there's two ways you go under state law. The main law is Florida Statutes 218-415, and that was written, I had the pleasure of meeting the staff people that wrote that law. That was done after a number of communities in the Panhandle and the Treasure Coast part of the state got into some very bad investments, sold to them by very bad people in our industry. That's why we're regulated. That's why I'm regulated. Our industry's regulated. But that doesn't mean there's not bad folks out there. And so they were investing in things that went adversely against them in their position. They lost money. And investigating this with lawsuits and other things, it was determined that the staff didn't know what they were investing in and had no idea what the potential risks were of some of these investments. I take care of my mom's money. She's 90. She invests a little differently than I do, although I'm getting a little older. I'm not 90. So you can either have your own policy, or if you don't have your own policy, you do because you adopt the state's policy. And as an example of that, when I teach these classes to city county managers and finance officers and others, the Bar Association, if you don't have your own specific policy, which you have and you're considering updating it, the legislature was pretty smart in saying, what should these folks invest in? How can we keep it simple and keep them out of trouble? One of those is bank products that are collateralized under state law. Banks are required to do that under Florida Statute 280. They collateralize that at a certain level based on the strength of the bank, and Department of Financial Services helps all the communities with that. Texas does this as well. We're very fortunate for communities in the state that we have that statute. You can invest in money market funds. You have that in your policy. We want to make sure the money market funds are at least AAA rated or the highest rated they can be. And local government investment pools, you can pool your resources to buy police cars or buy other things. The same things apply under Statute 16301 for pooling of resources for investments. And local government investment pools are very popular, very strong, and also AAA rated. And you can buy U.S. Treasuries. Not U.S. agencies, not different things. So when I looked at your policy, and I know the size of your staff, you've got about $10 million plus or minus to invest, which is a lot. From a government perspective, it's not a lot. Some of these big counties have over $1 billion they invest. We wanted to make sure that when we looked at your policy, what can you invest in, what makes sense, what we are already doing, and your staff is doing a great job for you. There was none of that. And that's where we looked at the policy. So when you look through the specific pages, you'll see we actually crossed out a number of different investments. That's because you'll never buy banker's acceptances and repurchase agreements and mortgage-backed securities and asset-backed commercial paper. You just won't do that. That's not suitable. It's not appropriate. You don't have an investment advisor helping you with those things. So some of those changes happened fairly quickly in going through that and looking at what Kim was already doing. You, therefore, have the ability to do your own policy, which is why we're in front of you tonight to update it. The objectives are very clear. Yes, you want to look at yield and what are you earning. The biggest thing is safety of principal. This is not your money. It's not Kim's money. It's not my money as your financial advisor. This is the town's money. And she serves and the town manager serve as fiduciaries, just like I do for my mom under a trust, for their funds, to invest that and put the interests of the town above their own interests and their own desires. So it's really safety of principal, liquidity. What's really important is you have money that is available to pay bills when bills are due, whether those are ongoing monthly bills, right? And we'll get into cash flow analysis with Kim and her staff later on as we get more engaged as part of our ongoing assignment. And then you look at yield. Okay, that's the last thing that the statute talks about. There's things in the statute about controls and oversight. That's very important. We'll spend some time looking at those. We've spent a lot of time helping folks in different communities with that, so we're not starting from scratch. One of the key things is best practices. The government finance officers have a lot of things they talk about, whether you're doing debt issues or you're doing